The World Tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. This is Garner Ted Armstrong with the good news of the world tomorrow. What's behind the tremendous change in the attitude toward marriage today? Recently, a Chicago divorce lawyer in his profession of 35 years now made a shocking statement. He said, "In all my years in this business, I've never seen so many people having marital difficulties. I've never known so many under constant psychiatric care. I've never seen such a casual, don't care attitude toward getting married and divorced. I would say that respect for marriage today is at the lowest ebb it's ever been." Well, my friends, that's certainly illustrated by the fact that nearly one out of three of our homes in the United States of America today have been affected by divorce, and that here in Los Angeles, in this county, for example, as I've said before on this World Tomorrow program, it's about half. Every other home has been affected by divorce. Now, you know, back a few years, there was a time when people at least displayed some sense of guilt or regret or unhappiness at having to end their marriages, but not anymore. It's a ball, it's a trip to Reno, it's a big joke, and people seem to enjoy movies, books, novels, and the like, written about divorce, about triangles, about upset homes and upside-down marriages, little children having to be farmed out to others than their own parents. Well, what's behind it? What caused this tremendous change of attitude toward marriage and divorce in a nation such as ours in just a few short years? Is it an indication, as some now believe, that the institution of marriage as we now know it is on its way out? You know, sociologists try to back off and view the entirety of the world as a system of ever-changing patterns. They say that truth is relevant, that truth changes, that truth is more or less established by what people say, think, and do. Not that truth is absolute, not that truth is positive, based upon law, and that people sometimes disobey law and don't tell the truth. But now they're wondering if this is not a trend which is finally going to emerge as yet one more facet in the constant evolutionary pattern of the development of the human species, and that marriage as we know it today may well be on the way out. That's what they think. Now, many would think that this very idea is preposterous, but there are glimmers of evidence disturbing to those who still believe in the sanctity of marriage as an American way of life, that this concept is, true enough, changing. At least it's changing among the people, if not among the sociologists who are studying it. Now, you can see it in the divorce courts and in statistical records, in the reports of attorneys, judges, marriage counselors, psychiatrists, social scientists, and church leaders. All of these people, remember, are dealing in one capacity or another with the marriage-divorce problem in the United States. And they all agree that the whole marriage-divorce situation has declined over the last 20 years. And here are some of the most significant of the changes. And then I'm going to show you what's behind it, and why divorce is so prevalent today, and what you and your own home and your own family can do about it. And there's nothing more important to your own private and personal life, the chances are, right now, and especially so many of you may be thinking about divorce, than to find out, are there laws that guarantee marital happiness? I mean, aside from all the tons of literature that have been published on the subject, all of the tremendous magazines every single week absolutely flooding the newsstand trying to tell women how to be happy. Wading through all the debris of the past ages, when you come right down to it, is there a clear-cut, simple answer? Is there a real panacea? Is there some real way to marital happiness which, if you follow it, you can have an absolute guarantee that you will have a happy marriage? Well, there is such a way. You keep listening and then write to the literature I announce, which is free of charge, and you can find that way. Well, here are some of the changes of just the past 20 years. Number one, what many frankly call an appalling number of teenage marriages are ending in divorce. This has been talked of, and literature has been written on it by the ton, I should imagine, by now. Sociologists and marriage counselors are saying it's a deplorable, pitiful thing, but many, many marriages today are entirely too young. Second, the increase in illegitimacy and premarital pregnancy is now at an all-time high. Nationwide studies have found that many teenage girls are getting married simply because, or I shouldn't say simply, because perhaps it's not so simple, But because they are already pregnant or have already given birth to an illegitimate child, and these marriages often, they find, end in divorce. Third, the divorce rate also has increased significantly among older married groups, who now find themselves, because of the avalanche of propaganda they've been swallowing, increasingly unhappy, dissatisfied. Some of them have been married, can you believe it, 25 up to 30 and 35 years, and yet they're getting divorces today. Fourth, the divorce rate has increased noticeably among couples with three and more children. Whereas formerly, they thought the more children you have, the more your chances of staying together. The longer you're married, the better your chances of staying together. Now they're absolutely appalled to find that even these things will not, apparently, in today's changing world, hold marriages together. Psychiatrists, like divorce lawyers, are literally swamped with marriage problems. This is the fifth point. And this isn't any generalization, because all research investigations bear out the observations of divorce lawyers and judges that at no time in their experience have there been so many divorce clients under psychiatric care. Sixth, marriage counseling agencies also are overwhelmed. And my friends, let me tell you something really plain and straight from the shoulder, and you can agree with it real quickly, I think. Any time that any husband and wife sit down and talk over their problem and decide to take the step to go and lay bare their personal problems to a marriage counselor, you can bet they're in serious trouble. And I would venture the guess that for every family who comes to such a decision, there are many, many families who have deep-seated problems but simply would not be of the willingness to go and talk them over with a counselor. They simply would rather try to work them out or just live with them, as the case may be, or just end up in divorce before they ever did see a marriage counselor. That's pretty well true to human nature. Well, now, all the agencies are totally overwhelmed and jammed today. Student marriages were considered rather startling, even in college, 15 years ago. Today, they are commonplace. People want to get married in high school. They want to get married as college freshmen and sophomores. They're commonplace in colleges and not really unknown in high schools. Why, today, many times you'll find young couples getting married in high school and finishing out their senior year as a married couple. And the statistics on teenage marriages are startling, even to veteran marriage divorce experts. Of all first marriages for females, 47% were 19 or under. Now, taking a look at all the first marriages, the statistics showing the first marriages for all females, nearly half of them were 19 or under at the time of marriage, and 26% were 18 or under. This, despite the well-known fact that a bride under 20 runs a three times greater divorce risk than one over 20, and 43% of all 20-year-old college boys are married. Isn't that amazing? Nearly half of all 20-year-old college students are married today. Yes, truly, the picture is really changing, and it's changing radically. Now, divorce among teenagers is viewed quite differently than it was just a few years ago. And this includes those from broken homes, because it's being viewed as an acceptable means out of an unhappy marriage. It works, it's good, it's fine, they say. If it doesn't work, you've always got an out. And, of course, they even enter into the first marriage with that attitude in the back of their mind. Is it any wonder, then, that so many of these youthful marriages fall apart? They have had neither the training from home nor the society to prepare them for a marriage. They are not prepared by age, by financial ability, by experience, by preparation for marriage. And they go into marriage with the idea they've got an easy out. Do you find anything in this that will really lead to the basis of a home, that will lead to a successful, established home, and will lead toward a couple staying together until death do they part? Now, a survey among more than 600 representative young people showed that most of them attach virtually no social stigma to divorce. It isn't embarrassing socially. It doesn't bother people socially to admit they've been divorced 2, 3, 5 times. Why should they? Don't some of the most successful social figures in our nation today point with a little bit of pride to the fact they've been married and divorced 5 or 6 times? And aren't those very people, with their hideous failures in their own private marriages, paraded before the eyes and the minds of young, impressionable, growing people in the movie screens every single day, week, and month, as being the epitome of all that is desired The exact picture of success that every teenager would like to achieve. Yes, all the whole thing, complete with their wrecked homes and their shambles of marriages. It's all sort of lauded, looked up to. It's all applauded. It seems to be accepted as a real good thing today by so many people. Now, 1/5 of these 600 representative young people questioned came from homes in which there had been a divorce. But despite this background, their responses to various questions corresponded closely to those of the rest of the group. And this held true even on the question of whether children of a divorced couple can have a normal home life. 80% of this entire group of 600 said yes, they thought they could. And among those from broken homes, 88% said yes. When asked whether they would stick out an unhappy marriage just to avoid divorce, 77% of the teenagers said no. They said they would seek divorce as an out first, and this, I want to remind you, was asked of 600 representative young teenagers who are not yet married. Almost the same percentages held true among those from divorced parents. And on the multiple answer question of justifiable reasons for divorce, 93% picked physical cruelty as an intolerable situation in marriage. Of course, physical cruelty covers a broad host of subjects which most people don't care to talk about, even with their marriage counselors. Well, you know, divorce lawyers today, said a news clipping from a Harrisburg, Pennsylvania paper, are so swamped they're even turning away business, sending their clients to marriage counseling agencies, sending them to their preacher, their clergyman, to their doctors, anybody who can help them, because they simply can't get around to them all. But they usually come back because divorce lawyers don't get away with it. Divorce lawyers are fighting the battle, too. They're trying to keep people from getting divorced, so they send them to see a counselor. But they see the counselor and come right back to the divorce lawyer. They might give it a try for all of 2 or 3 days or a week, but they find that divorce is the easiest way out. And besides, people believe variety is the spice of life, and so they go looking for another mate because they've been taught that is the way to do. They have not been taught by those who are supposed to be handling the laws of God that marriage is just what people call it today, holy wedlock. We like to call it holy matrimony, which is an unfortunate term that means mother-fy someone. Matrimony, it should be called patrimony, perhaps, but it's called, unfortunately, matrimony. Well, be that as it may, you might as well call it just plain marriage or wedlock, which is a far better term. But, you know, the Spanish have a far better word for it. They take the word casa, which comes from the word house in the English language, and by that they mean house or home, and so they take that word and form a verb which means to house oneself. And the word for marriage in Spanish, or to get married, is to casarse. Casar is to marry, and casarse is to marry, or one who is being married. Are you going to get married? Va casarse usted. And so that means, are you going to house yourself, if you were to transliterate it literally into the English language? That's a better term, too, because it seems to convey the idea of establishing a home, which doesn't even seem to enter into the minds of so many people getting married today. There's no thought in their minds about establishing a home, because a home has to do with a house or a building which is to be lived in. It's a place where people live, a place where babies are born, where children grow up. A home is to be lived in, enjoyed, not just a motel room where you hang your hat and sleep at night and get out of it as quickly as you can in the morning. A place to escape from and leave a sitter with the kids. People are eating out, going out, taking trips, visiting the movies, or else they're escaping their home life by sitting in front of a ready-made daydream in television today, because there isn't much home life anymore. What happened to it? Where did it go? Why no home life? Now you can go back to the Hollywood glamour star who took her own life either by design or accidentally, and they speculated about it for weeks, but there was no note left, so they thought maybe it was an accident. An overdose of pills, we understand. Now here was a woman who had achieved fame, fortune, but had she achieved happiness? Her personal private life was so mixed up, so totally upside down. She was so fearful, so confused, that she came within an hair's breadth several times of taking her own life, and finally, either by design or by accident, as I said, she did succeed. Now, she was a Hollywood glamour star that was sought after by millions, who was the idol of millions, people would go up almost in breathless awe and say, "Would you please sign this and let me have your autograph?" She was the very synonym of the word sex to most of America's males and much of the world. But after all the eulogizing and after all the articles were written and after all the newspapers had spread the story across their first and second pages, one starkly clear fact still remained. She was dead. Now, did she have a successful life? Was she happy? She lived the kind of life that billions of young teenage girls would love to have lived. At least so they think, in their ignorance, not really knowing the kind of life this poor, unhappy creature did live. Was she really happy? Was she successful? It depends on what you call success. Is it success never to know the deep, happy joy of seeing your own children grow up, of having the quiet, peaceful years of your own grandchildren visiting in your home, of having a happy, established home and married life that you can live in serenity and peace for years and years, to have a full life of real joy and happiness? Is it success to be cut off right in the middle of your most productive youthful years because you're so frustrated, so mixed up, so purposeless, so fearful and confused that you try to take your own life? You know, people need to draw out and look at with a good, long, hard stare some of the so-called success stories of the world of today. Because many of our youthful girls would like to live just exactly like that, because it seems like applause and your face on a magazine cover and maybe the leading role in a movie and furs and nice cars and jewelry and fabulous homes, lounging around swimming pools, mixing cocktails in the sun, you know, a big, tremendous life of pleasure, leisure, and adoration from the American and, for that matter, the males around the world. That would be what they're after. But does it really lead to happiness? Is it something that really ought to be had? Is it something that a person really should want? Because is there any happiness in it? Not in one example that you could point out. Not in a single one. Well, now, my friends, what is behind it? You can prove there is a God. All you need to do is write in for this booklet, Does God Exist? And the companion article, The Proof of the Bible, or the booklet, The Proof of the Bible, with the article on 7 Proofs that God Exists. Now, that God is lawgiver. There are laws. The very fact that there is divorce shows there are laws being broken, because there are penalties being paid. And that God laid down spiritual, hidden, unseen, yet very active laws that regulate marriage, that would show you a way to a happy marriage. Because God is the inventor of marriage, and He set down the laws that would guarantee a happy marriage. Now, just what is success for a woman? Why, it is to fulfill the very purpose for her creation, her existence, her very being. That's what success for a woman really is. What would you say success is to the designers of a brand new jet? The ones who are the aeronautical engineers of the big companies. What would be successful? Why, if their trial model finally comes off the drawing boards and gets a completed model, and they have all of the tests, and it's inspected and looked at by the government and the big commercial agencies, and finally they have an order for multiple billions of dollars, many, many hundreds of perhaps exact replicas, and they would say, well, that thing is absolutely maneuverable, it's fast, it conserves on fuel, it's serviceable, it's going to last for years, and so on. And so here is a fantastic new jet aircraft. Now, what would you do with that jet aircraft? Make a diner out of it, park it alongside the road, install some stools, and sell hamburgers in it? That's not the purpose for which it was designed, is it? What would you do with it? Try to make it float, make a ship out of it instead of an aircraft? Hardly. It isn't designed for that. What would you do with it? The minute you get it produced in all of its flawless beauty and perfection and it's just ready to take off on the runway, you decide to scrap it and see how much you can get for the scrap metal. Tear it down and sell it for parts. Well, you see, it was designed to fly, to carry passengers. And Almighty God designed man and woman, and He put them in the Garden of Eden, and He designed them for a fantastically beautiful, tremendous purpose that very few people have ever even seen or had a glimmer of truth concerning, and very few people have ever sought and tried to find. And a woman was designed to be a wife and a mother. A woman was designed, she was built, she was designed by the great architect who made the human mind and body to be a wife and a mother. Now, a woman can argue with that for centuries, and it isn't going to change the plain fact. And the only way in which a woman can have true and real happiness, spiritual happiness, the real happiness that God Himself intended for women, is to fulfill that purpose that God Himself set. Now, you know, there are the books and the magazines trying to show you women what success is supposed to be for you. And after all, this affects about 50% of the population of the world, because about half of us are women and half of us are men. So, you know, it's a pretty big subject, isn't it? So there's an absolute grist mill grinding away, turning out tons of literature, flooding the nation every week with advice to the lovelorn, with all kinds of articles, giving advice on everything from how not to smell bad on how to hold your hair in place. They'll tell you in one ad how to be lovely by keeping your pores clean by a certain soap, and in the other one how to be lovely by plugging them up with a deodorant. They'll tell you how to be lovely by pasting on a fake face, or various accoutrements and paraphernalia you can wear in your clothing, for that matter, complete with wig, false eyelashes, a big splash of black around the rims of them, a painted mouth bearing no reasonable facsimile to your own, and a big shocking array of blazing colors that would frighten a person half out of his wits if he weren't accustomed to it by seeing it every single day. And you can buy all this to sort of hide that lackluster complexion brought about by no exercise and poor diet. Now, is happiness to be found this way, my friends? Is all this stuff trying to sell happiness to you really going to show you where you can buy it? You can buy articles giving you advice, and every single one of them has to have some kind of an article on sex, about your capacity or your compatibility or your this and that and the other thing, all about the American wives and mothers. Every single article and book, you know, you're familiar with it. It's just like tomorrow's newspaper. It's so familiar. And it seems they can't sell a book or a magazine without it, but now they're selling copies by the millions. But are they selling happiness? And the very fact that you see so much of it spread around every single news counter in the nation proves that wives, sweethearts, mothers are not happy today. They want to know how. Where do you find it? How do you look for it? Where do you go to get it? How do you be happy? But they're not going to find it by trying to buy the copy of the latest lurid stories of the unsuccessful marriages of Hollywood stars. They're just not going to do it. Now, your Bible says there is a way that seems right to a man. There is a way that seems good to a man. And for the past several generations, it seemed good to modern man, especially in the United States, to emancipate woman from the home, from motherhood, from her responsibility that Almighty God designed for her originally. This has seemed good. Mothers of the United States and the world, have you found happiness? How many happy married couples do you know? How many really successful marriages can you point to today? What about our children? What about our homes? And is the sanctity of marriage really becoming old stuff? Or isn't it about time we began to get back to the way Almighty God originally designed it? And isn't it about time we began to look for the real key to happy homes and marriages for the sake of our children, for our own sake, and for the sake of our nation and our way of life? Well, now, you can write in for some articles on the subject that we have for you that go into it right through the Bible. And remember, God is absolutely the creator and the one who designed and made human beings. He's the one who designed and invented marriage. He's the one that lays down the laws on how to make a success of your marriage. Now, many, many of our listeners have been writing in about marital and family problems and requesting these articles on Your Marriage Can Be Happy, or How to Have a Happy Marriage. So if you haven't written in for it yet, well, be sure to do so. We've got plenty of copies for you, and there will be other articles coming along in future numbers of the Plain Truth magazine on the same subject, so be sure you get your name on the mailing list of the Plain Truth, and be sure to receive every single issue. Now, write for this article on how to have a happy marriage. God said through Isaiah centuries ago, He said, "As for my people, children are their oppressors, and women rule over them." And today we're absolutely under the heel, it seems, of oppression, and as a result of our own children, juvenile delinquency and violence, and also upset homes and marriages. So write in for this article explaining it, going back through the New Testament, showing you what Jesus Christ Himself taught about it, showing you what Paul had to say, what Peter said, showing you the laws that God Almighty Himself gave which will lead to a happy marriage. Showing you how you can avoid family arguments. There's another article, by the way, with that title, on how to solve family arguments. And I'll give you the guarantee that if you write for this article, if you read it, and then if you just follow it, every single time you start to get into an argument, if you follow that article and you put it into practice, you simply won't have arguments. And if you start to have one, you'll get rid of it awfully quickly, the very moment you put it into practice. How many homes are there where people live together like a pair of strangers, where they can't seem to have a decent word passed between them? People who have been sharing all the rigors of life for years, people who have been living together, sharing some of the human experiences that are the epitome of everything, anywhere from death in the family to the birth of a child, anything from the solving of an extreme financial hardship and difficulty to perhaps the burning of a home. And here, two partners have shared all of these tremendous experiences together and have lived for years, and now all of a sudden, after a long period of time, it seems, here are people living together like a pair of total strangers, unable to discuss things intelligently, unable to come to agreement, unable to have a pleasant word passed between them, unable to reconcile their difficulties and solve their arguments and problems. Why is that? Isn't there any way around it? Why is it that they begin to squabble back and forth and neither one is willing to give one inch? And finally it ends up with one or the other slamming the door and jumping in the car and roaring off to the nearest bar or something else. And maybe it's happening in your own home, but you know it's happening in entirely too many homes today. It is a constant thing, and that's a fact, and most of you know it. Now, you can solve your family arguments and problems if you know the method, if you know the way, and if you're willing to put it into practice. Because, of course, in any of these things that are based upon the laws of God, agreement in principle and agreement in theory is nowhere near enough. These laws must be practiced. They must be followed. They've got to be put into action in order to enjoy the benefits and the blessings from them. Now, that's three pieces of literature right there. They're all free of charge, by the way. There's no charge for them. We want to give them to you, and there's no follow-up. Get these articles. They're free, and you need them. If there's anything more important than your marriage and your home, it's simply the spiritual, deeper things. But certainly to you, and to most of you, one of the most important things in your life right now is your own home, your marriage, your family. You need to realize how desperately you need to hold it together. So write for this article on how to have a happy marriage, and also the article on how to solve family arguments. All you need to do for the articles and the booklets I've announced is send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California. Remember, they're free of charge. Write for the articles on how to have a happy marriage, the one on how to solve family arguments. Write for the articles on child rearing, why delinquency begins in the home. Other articles, if you request the three on child rearing, we'll send them to you. We know which ones you mean. Also, the booklet, Does God Exist? And the Proof of the Bible. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California. Be sure to do this. List the call letters of the station to which you're listening. It doesn't matter whether you put them on the back of the envelope or the top of the page or somewhere in the middle. We'll get it. But be sure to tell us the call letters of the station over which you heard this broadcast. That is important. We'd like to know. So write in to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. And so until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.